Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
You join us again for another Need to Know podcast. This is episode 187 on the run to episode 200. Joined again by my co-host, Brenton Johnson. Welcome.
Great to be back, Robert.
Well, we've had a couple of big ones recently. There's lots that's been going on. We've also got some things to review here and plenty of news. And we've got a great interview that you did with two people that managed to get themselves all the way over to the Inspire Conference in Big Bad Las Vegas. So we're looking forward to that at the end of this little update from us. So in the meantime, what's been happening in your world there, Brenton?
Well, today I run a cybersecurity workshop as part of the Victorian Small Business Festival. It was quite an interesting one, actually, because there's only two cybersecurity events, and I was the one who ran both of them. So given how much is on the agenda, particularly for small business, I was quite surprised about that. So we had CEOs and people like that. So it was a very, very businessy, non-technical workshop. But
so you're dealing with all the users who give their passwords away if you go and ask them for them.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
The people that have trouble with two-factor authentication.
Oh, you can have policy, but really what we're talking about and what we talk about a lot on this podcast as well is business owners aren't asking for those policies to be enforced with a technology solution. So they'll go, yeah, we don't want people leaving the office with all our customer data. It's like, well, how about you look at Azure Rights Management or some sort of information rights
or
management
even just
over the top
of it. Two-factor authentication in Office 365. Please, God, turn it on.
Well, yeah, and it's hard, it's complicated. It's really not that bad. And the Microsoft 2FA is quite good because it will push notifications.
Yeah, you just got to put your finger on it. Yeah, it's amazing. So again, I think that it does. I think part of it is you've got to look at the effective cost, the risk mitigation cost that you could end up paying if you do get breached. So I put a link in the show notes here about the notifiable data breaches quarterly statistics, the first report that came out on up to June, end of June there. Some very interesting statistics there. So it shows you basically who had to declare data breach, what industry they were from, why they had to do it. So I'd certainly recommend that if you're in the business or you're interested, go and have a look at this report. It gives you a very good indication of what we're seeing out there with phishing and what sort of industries are being affected. And given that Australia currently has trying to set up a national medical database, you would be surprised, probably unsurprised, to learn that the industry that was most affected by data breaches happened to be the healthcare provider one. So doesn't bode well.
And I think health is chronically underserviced in cybersecurity because what usually happens is there's some kid with cancer who's, 9 years old or something, and he needs a special machine in order to live. And then on the other end of the equation, there's a cybersecurity expert saying you need to spend the same amount of money securing your systems. And because we're humans, we make the decision that maybe it's better to save the kid's life. But unfortunately, that has led to a lot of insecure, old, antiquated systems and not enough investment in information technology systems and security for health. So I think that's why we're getting this. This is not the case in banks and financial institutions where security is always top of mind. Security is always the focus.
I'd be careful making that statement. I don't always think that's the case, you know. I mean, it's better than average.
I don't think it's always the case, but it's something I've observed that,
I can tell you that most banks run on a single spreadsheet, which is stored on the CEO's desktop, right? So I think
If we're talking about a Combank, if we're talking about the Big Four, they've got a very sophisticated cybersecurity approach about them, and everyone looks to the bank and says, you know, how should we do cybersecurity? You've been doing it longer than we have. It's really banks and governments that pioneered this stuff, that pioneered computers. So people are looking at that. Yeah, I don't know. I just think we can all do a little bit better.
Well, I think we can all do a little bit better, and the SMBs, again, need to allocate some dollars and turn on some of the stuff that they're getting for free now, like two-factor authentication and whatnot, and again, having a think about in reality and the real cost of it that is now a legislative effect. So, again, there's a lot that can be done. I think that, yes, there's going to be a bit of pain, but a bit of pain means that there will be more secure. We lock our cars, we lock our houses, we do that for a reason. We carry our credit cards around in a wallet or a purse to protect them. So the same thing applies to the data that we use day to day. So lots that can be done and lots that we still probably need to do and get out there and start enforcing. And you know where the first place to start is, Brenton? Where's the very first place that you would recommend that people start with security?
Oh, where do we start?
The way we start is you start with your own security, right? So if you're an IT person, make sure you secure your Outlook, your Amazon, your Google, whatever, two-factor, whatever you've got to do, encrypt your files. Again, you need to lead by example and make sure this sort of stuff is encrypted and you know how to use it. So one of the statements that I use when I do presentations generally is basically get people to say, well, is every device you brought into this room encrypted at rest? Is your laptop, is your phone, are the USB keys you've got, are they all encrypted at rest? So that's the point to start is, again, if we all looked after ourselves a little bit better and made ourselves a bit more secure, as you suggested, then everything would probably be a lot more secure. So I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, and I don't think you sell anything that you don't use yourself particularly well. So if you're sitting there going, you need to have 2FA, oh, it's annoying. How do you deal with the annoyance? Oh, I don't have it on. It's like, well, you know, why should I go to the effort of doing it if you can't even turn it on and you've got more valuable data than me? You've got access to every business that you work with. You can shut them down instantly.
Cool. Well, you've been out hobnobbing with the CEOs of CommBank and whatnot, I have had my head down and backside up doing some Azure exams. So Azure has now three new exams, AZ 100, 101, and 102. These are sort of an add-on to the older ones, which were 70, 532, 533, and 534. The good thing about the newer exams are they're far more infrastructure focused. They're better, I think, for a lot of people who work with small businesses. They generally don't cover things like IoT and that sort of thing, and software, so they're mainly focused on the infrastructure, DNS, Azure AD, migration, all that. So those exams are in beta. They'll come out of beta in a week or two, and I would strongly suggest people have a look at doing those. I think they're a very good indication, a very good way to study and get up to speed on the Azure stuff and give yourself a goal to go to. So they were surprisingly, I suppose, you know, a lot tougher than I thought they would be. They're quite long, 60-odd questions. And again, but I certainly recommend if you haven't done them, certainly put them in your sights and look at doing them. I think there's a lot of benefits to becoming certified and also going through the process and validating the knowledge you have in the product. And of course, there are two Office 365 certification exams from Microsoft, so 7347, 346. Again, we recommend that you do both of those. And if you need any assistance, reach out to us, reach out to me, and I'll be able to help you and give you some guidance on that. So that's been keeping me busy and finished the last one this morning, but we've still got some time that I've allocated to getting some news. So one of the things that I've seen that's new is a new guided deleted user workflow. So this means that when you retire or when a user leaves your organization, what's the standard process you go through? You change their password or disable the account, convert to a shared mailbox. Well, Microsoft's now giving you a flow, workflow to step through that's in the portal that will make sure that you do all the right things, disable, and also hand off the permissions to the right people. The way I would always do it is with a PowerShell script. That's generally going to give you the best result, but now Microsoft has allowed you to do this directly in the portal. So I'll put the link for that in the show notes. What news have you got for us, Brent?
Yeah, I've actually had to do that already, delete a customer, and it's very, very user-friendly. It was good, very simple,
yeah,
very
impressive.
Easy to understand. And I was like, oh, wow, I could get a level one tech to do this, yep. And they if they struggled, you'd sack them. It's that simple.
Well, I think you're going to see more of these sort of guided, you know, standard procedures being rolled in by Microsoft, and probably there'll be an automation option that you can push a PowerShell command. It'll actually run this whole workflow for you once you put the parameters in. So this is certainly the way it's going, I think. But if you haven't had a look, yeah, I think it's a real step up from the old standard wizards we used to see. It is quite intelligent in what it does and user-friendly. So, again, we'll put the link in the show notes so you can have a look. News from you, what have you got? What can you kick us off with, Brenton?
What have we got here? Microsoft's hiking prices for Office 2019 and Windows 10 Enterprise. That's all about trying to get people on the subscription model.
Isn't that about on-prem? What's this on-prem stuff of which you speak, Brenton?
Yeah, I forgot which podcast I was on for a second, Robert. It's an incentive for people to move to the as-a-service model rather than doing the traditional, we'll go buy 1,000 licenses and we'll roll them out. It's definitely a push towards that subscription model, which I think works really well. The mid-market and small business sectors get the most out of it, I think, because they know exactly where their licensing's at. You know, I'm talking to people in mid-market and they're going, oh, I don't know how many Windows licenses I have or need or whatever. If I get audited, I'll say, well, I can't keep up. But now with Office 365, let's go buy a whole bunch of Microsoft 365 licenses. And you know, they can license everything on subscription now, so they're all over it. They know how many Office licenses they have because everyone in the organization has an Office 365 license, so they all have an Office license. And so it's made their life a hell of a lot easier and a lot more stress-free. And I think Microsoft pushing this and priking the prices is a good step in the right direction.
Well, I think it indicates that Microsoft has still got committed to on-prem, so we're still going to do Office, SharePoint on-prem, Exchange on-prem 2019. So those, I think, are out, so you can have a look at those if you want. Obviously, the trend is to the subscription model where the price can be spread across a large amount of users on a per-monthly basis. So it's not surprising to see the prices being raised. It's unfortunate, but again, I think the trend is that the benefits for the smaller organization, particularly in the subscription model, always up to date, new versions available and whatnot. So, but if you wanted to, there is still the option to do the on-prem world. Again, I think that Exchange Server 2019 is out there if you want to go out and have a play with it, have a look, see what it does. But basically, my understanding is a lot of this 29 technology is about 6 to 9 months behind what we're seeing in Office 365 because they freeze it at a point in time and obviously deploy it out, and then they're going to have service packs to get it up to the level that Office 365 is today, which has then moved on further. So again, there's a bit of a compromise there to be made, but again, you know, Microsoft is making available, so there obviously is a requirement for people to do that. So one of the other things I saw here is that there are some new Azure, well, lots of new Azure AD roles coming from Microsoft. So generally, you would have a global admin, an Exchange admin, a SharePoint admin, a billing admin, maybe a user admin. Well, according to this article that we'll link in the show notes, Microsoft is looking at a range of, you know, a large range of new admins, roles that you can assign. So you're going to have things like application developer, cloud application administrator, compliance administrator, directory writers, blah, 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 and so on. So there's lots and lots, probably 30, I think, or maybe 20-odd new roles.
29, it says in the article.
29? Okay, yeah, so there you go, 30, I was close.
Yep.
So yeah, and the Microsoft article here will show you what they've got access to. So it's going to allow you that better granular control, but again, more options may mean a bit more confusion, but look out for those appearing in your tenant. I haven't seen them as yet, but they are certainly on the way, and that's a good way to make sure that the security matches exactly what you need to administer that sort of thing. What else have we got here that I can see? One of the other things that I'm going to blame Brenton for, so B for Brenton also means B for blame, where R for Robert also means right. All the time. So just so we're clear on that, I did mention in the last podcast that I was making available my discounts to my new Office 365 online security course, and I neglected to give out the coupon code for that, and someone contacted me, and I've now made that available. So what I've got is I'll put the link for the URL with the discount directly in the show notes, but the discount code will be podcast, all one word, which you go to my CIA CIAOpsAcademy.com. Look for the Office 365 security course, and then if you use the coupon code podcast, you'll get $150 discount on that. That will last until the 1st of September. So if you do want to take that, there's over 50 lessons that I've put together. PowerShell, how to secure an Office 365 tenant, make sure things are locked down, monitoring alerts, all that sort of stuff. Certainly recommend that to you. So that's now available. So again, the coupon code is podcast, all uppercase, and I'll make sure that I do put the link in the show notes for you. What else, Brenton? What else have we got here? What else can you tell us?
What's going on with OneDrive, Robert?
Good old OneDrive. OneDrive is on a bit of a tear at the moment. We're going to see lots of new updates, I think, as we get closer to Ignite. So Ignite is in late September, I think, so it's not too far away now. So we're going to see, expect a huge amount of updates and announcements around that. So the OneDrive documentation has now moved to its own little hub. There's a new location that it's all aggregated together, the training, the documentation, all that sort of stuff is in there. There are some versioning changes around SharePoint and OneDrive when it comes to dealing with files. Nothing major, but some information you need to be across. Good old OneDrive is now going to remember your column sorting orders. That's always painful for somebody when they sort a column maybe from A to Z or by size or something, that it doesn't retain that, but it's going to do that for you. And we've also seen some updates on Android. I think the big update is the new scanning experience for Androids. For those of you who aren't aware, the Office Lens capability, which allows you to scan receipts, whiteboards, documents, and upload those and OCR those into searchable text, is now available in OneDrive on iOS and is now being updated and also available in the OneDrive client for Android. So again, Android and iOS now reaching par. So iOS is always generally the first one for whatever reason. Microsoft treats that as the priority. Android is generally not that far behind after that, but lots of updates. We expect to see more updates for OneDrive and other products, but I think the big ones are going to start coming out with Inspire, which is, again, is about September. So we're looking forward to that. I think we'll have lots of news we can talk about then. What else, Brenton? What else have you? What else can you share with us?
What else we got? There's some new updates in Microsoft Teams.
Good old Teams, yeah. Teams. We always like Teams. There's always new stuff around Teams. Did we talk about the live event stuff? Did we talk about that in the last podcast? The new live streaming events?
Sure we didn't. No.
Yeah. So again, I don't know if you want to take that, but basically, what is now available is the ability to stream live events with multiple cameras through Teams, through Yammer, through SharePoint. Again, this is part of the Stream service. It's quite powerful in what it can do and the way it does auto-recording and transcription, so go and have a look at that. The only downside is, from what I can see at the moment, is you can't invite external users, which is a bit of a pain for my little community that has a lot of external users, but I think that will certainly come. So if you haven't seen the live events that are coming to Teams and Yammer and some of these other things, go and have a look at those. What else? Anything else in that Teams update that grabs you, Brenton?
There's a nice little thing here, Mail Clerk, that lets you collectively manage external messages. So email, social, live chat, all in Teams. So this is one of the things that a lot of people do in Slack. They try and depreciate these external legacy systems like email. They're trying to manage multiple social media channels and people who want to communicate through them. Now with this software, I'll call it, in between, you can now do it all in Teams. So that sort of stuff I think is really, really cool. I think that's something that if you go talk to a customer and they'll primarily live their life out of email, but if they have to leave email for any reason, it's a real pain and they forget to get back to these customers because they got 15 other things, and how they usually manage it is notifications on their phone. So this is going to be a much better way. You can roll it out across the company and give access to whoever needs access to it without necessarily giving them the got access to social media. All of this sort of stuff is really, really cool and sort of really shows the value proposition of Teams, even in a small business environment. You can roll it out just about anywhere. because there's a use case almost every time with it.
Well, I think also too, it indicates the third-party support that Microsoft's now got, the app builders that are in there. So one of the ones that I use for demos to show customers is Hipmunk Bot. So the Hipmunk Bot allows you to basically work out the best travel price or the best flight price and come back and allow you to book it and do all that sort of stuff. Again, it's just effectively an automated search engine running at the back, but it's a good illustration of these sort of tools that are now available and being incorporated by third parties into Teams. If you hadn't had a look at that, certainly go and have a look at what's available. There's all sorts of things, automation, like I said, message handling, all sorts of things are in there. And don't forget that we've also now got free Microsoft Teams, so you could spin up a free Microsoft Teams and you could put a lot of these bots in there as well. Now, some of the bots, again, once they get to a certain level, do require payment or a subscription, so be aware of that. But they generally have a introductory or a free tier that you can go and get a feel for it, see whether it's worth value. And for small teams, there's probably not going to be any cost. But again, there's lots and lots of these new apps that are coming out that can really do some cool automation stuff. And there's even ones from Microsoft like Azure Bots that can actually, I think, go in and spin up, spin down virtual machines. You can do that from your Teams. So again, Teams is really becoming that centralized hub that all the businesses are using, and it can really start running some automation processes. And if you can also look at connecting it up with Flow and Power Apps, then you can begin to automate everything yourself and call this from Teams. So that's sort of the way to go, is look at automating, you know, all those sort of stuff as well. You've got the tools to do it if you generally have Office 365, which hopefully most people who we speak to on this podcast do. The other thing I saw was this productivity library. So the productivity library allows you to go in and do a filter on search or industry or role. So if you say, look, I'm in agriculture and I want to improve this, then it will again come down and filter out all the options and give you some resources you can refer to. So for example, case studies, white papers, documentation, video training, all that sort of stuff. So again, go and have a look at this productivity library. The idea is it sits above the actual products, allows you to pick the role, pick the industry, and hopefully come up with something that is more targeted and relevant to your specific organization there. Now, Brenton, I believe that you wanted to mention something about a special iPhone app.
Yeah, so a good friend of mine who we studied through school together, and he's gone out in the world and started his business, Big Scary World, and he's written up an app called PageTalk. So the idea is that when you're in a meeting and everyone's trying to look at the board papers, for example, everyone's scrolled to a different page. Everyone's like, oh, what page is it? You know, what page is page 10? Oh, is it 10 on the paper or 10 in the actual PDF? And it's like, oh, and some people have the paper version. It's just a nightmare. So he's created this app where everybody is scrolling on the same page. So you have one master, and then they scroll the page for everybody at the table, and everyone's on the same page at the same time. It's free for up to 3 people, so it might be a good one to pick up and just have a bit of a play with. I've got a video on there. I don't want to go too much onto it, but if you could send him some feedback as a result of seeing it or using it, or if you had any ideas, I'm sure he'd be very, very keen to hear those things. And I think it would be quite a good one to have after you've set up your meeting in Teams, you're putting stuff in Teams, but you also have your PDF, that your board papers that you need to keep on top of. So I think that would be the perfect use case for it.
Excellent. Well, you see that young Brenton is learning the ropes here. He always makes sure that he brings it back to a Microsoft centric conversation here. So we branch out slightly to iOS and Android, but we always come back to our core on-prem Office 2019 with software assurance. No, just kidding. So yeah, go out. We'll put the link to that in the show notes. You can have a look at it. If you've got any recommended apps, you've got something that's interesting, by all means, let us know. Again, we can only cover what people ask for. So again, we would certainly encourage you to make sure that you do get in contact with us with, again, anything that you wish to cover, anything that you think is interesting or you've noticed in the press you'd like us to talk about. Maybe we might be able to get the person or someone from Microsoft to come in and speak about it. I've managed to do that in a recent interview that I've got coming up shortly after we get through this one that Brenton did for us. Now, if you want to contact us here on the podcast, the best option is N2K Podcast on Twitter. So that's N and the number 2, N2K Podcast on Twitter, also N2K Podcast at Facebook. You can reach us on the email, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. All right, and to get access to Brenton over there on the Twitter, it's @ContactBrenton, and myself is @DirectorCIA, and all publicity and all inquiries are more than welcome for you to let us know about. Now, do you want to give us a bit of a background about this interview that you did with Cam and Taz there, Brenton, before we throw into it?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention the vendor, am I?
Do what you want. I can always edit it out after the fact. So if you hear nothing after what Brenton just says, or you hear a lot of white noise, you'll know that, yes, it was censored.
So there was a recent competition with one of the vendors. I won't tell you which vendor it is, but I'll tell you they're a cloud-only vendor that used to be called NewLease. And they ran a competition for the people who could roll out the most Office 365.
I think it was Microsoft 365, wasn't it?
Microsoft 365. Yeah, it had to be Microsoft 365. Right. So Cam and Taz, which they're not like 500 seat MSPs, they're like very small companies in comparison.
I think you should be talking this up, not talking it down.
No, I'm just saying they had the opportunity to go to Inspire. And the point of what we're talking about is that if you can get on the cutting edge, you can also take advantage of these opportunities. And that's something they really wanted to push through in this talk, that there's a lot of value in going. And the benefit of being a small team is you can move quickly on these opportunities. You're not a big hauling, lugging thing. You can go, okay, well, Microsoft 365 is out. What customers need that? Let's go out and have that conversation and deploy it. And all of a sudden, they're in Las Vegas on an all-expenses-paid trip. It's amazing.
Yeah, they had a good time. Plenty of stuff on Facebook, but I'm sure they'll share their benefits, business benefits as well. But like you said, I think that if you align yourself with the incentives from vendors and from Microsoft and, again, other providers, that there are a lot of benefits out there. I think it just takes a little bit of time to fill out to make sure that you do check the right boxes. But, you know, those options, like any prizes, are out there, and we certainly encourage people to take advantage of those. So, again, I think it's a good interview. I think that you'll get a lot of value out of that. So, again, spend the time and make sure that you do listen to people that have actually been to the big Microsoft partner conference there in Vegas. It was pretty huge, and see what the learnings are and what you can bring back for your own business. So, again, lots of benefits, and I thank Brenton for taking the time out, and obviously thank Cam and Taz for also spending time with us on the podcast to be guests and sharing their knowledge, which is always great to see. And always don't forget to provide us feedback. Let us know what you do want to hear and what you thought was great. We'll make sure that we do more of that, which we can do, can't we, Brenton?
We certainly can, Robert.
All right, so I think with that, we should call an end to our ramblings at the beginning here, and we'll get on to the interview with Cam and Taz.
I'm here with Cam Mayle and Taz Gray, and we're here talking about Microsoft Inspire 2018 from Las Vegas. So before we get started and talk a little bit more about that, I'm going to get Taz to introduce himself first, and then Cam's going to introduce himself as well.
Thank you, Brenton. So Taz Gray is my name. I'm from Axiom IT. We're a small managed service business based in Melbourne with 7 staff. And we predominantly lead with Microsoft 365 and cloud-only solutions.
Yeah, excellent.
I'm Cameron Mayle from OfficeWise. Predominantly, I help our clients help them adopt to a modern workplace and also using modern IT.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's keep moving. So you went to Inspire this year. How did you get there? Why did you go? How did this all come about?
Basically, we were lucky enough to keep an eye on our inboxes for an incentive from one of our distributors who had a competition to get us to Inspire in Vegas. So they paid for the airline ticket and also the accommodation, and more importantly, the entry into the show.
Yeah, and what sort of added value did having a distributor or a vendor actually come with you and provide that support?
There was a ton of added value. Just I mean, first and foremost, it just meant that we didn't have to organize anything ourselves. We were just about, just all we really had to do was turn up at the airport with a packed bag and away we went. But also on top of that, we were grouped together with, I think, eight other people who similar to us, running businesses in the same space, and which was a great opportunity to meet more people who were doing what we're doing and share ideas and bounce things off one another and really just make connections that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to.
Yeah, definitely. And just for the listeners at home who may not have heard of Inspire before, how would you describe Inspire, Cam?
Really, it's more about trying to tell the customers what they could expect for running Office 365 and Microsoft 365 in their office environment. So you get a lot of examples of use cases and how other people are implementing and helping clients adopt to a modern workplace. That was very strong, and also good use cases for Microsoft Teams. That was very strong in the show as well.
Yeah, and it's a partners only event, am I right?
Yeah. Even media weren't there. Oh. So it was very, very, very focused for partners rather than, you get the other hanger-oners of the media coming in and trying to find out where stories are and what they can show people.
Yeah, that's really good. So let's talk about some of the takeaways that you got there. Now, I was talking to Taz a little bit before about what was some of the really big takeaways. And one of the things that really stood out for me is when you got there, they said that there's 135 million Office 365 commercial customers now, but about 60% of their customer base is small business now. So they're working on addressing some of the challenges that MSPs would have. Can you expand a little bit on that, Taz?
Yeah, I think the number is actually more like 65% of seats now are, or revenue, not sure which one, but is small business attributed. But, as a partner and as other partners listening will know that a lot of the tools in Microsoft 365 and Office 365 are designed around running a single enterprise. So they're not very MSP friendly yet. One of the things that I took away from this conference is that focus has changed now from Microsoft, and that they do understand that there is a challenge there for us and they want to address this. So I think we can expect to see more changes coming around simplifying management across multiple tenants.
Yeah, I think everybody on the podcast has had that situation where, there's something we need to do and really the only feasible way to do it is PowerShell, but then you can't run it with MFA on because of this PowerShell script, so you gotta turn that off and then run it across your tenant. And then, it's been a real challenge to try and nail that. Have you had those sort of similar experiences, Cam?
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent about half a day just on the Microsoft stand talking to the heads of the product teams. When we say product teams, I'm not talking about like Word, Excel, PowerPoint. I'm talking about things like ATP or Intune. And I spoke to the product manager of Intune and I said, look, where are we going with being able to manage multiple devices across all of my clients, not just one particular client? And he said, look, we've been listening to feedback very closely, and that's what they're working on. They're working on a environment so that for someone like MSPs like ourselves can manage multiple devices across multiple tenants in one sort of place, rather than jumping from tenant to tenant to tenant and trying to think about and manage all of the tenants all at once. So for me, going to a show and being able to talk to the product managers one-on-one and sitting down and actually keep connecting there, I would not normally be able to have that opportunity. For me, that was a huge takeaway. That was of great benefit.
Yeah, so I'd add to that too by saying that it is very easy to think that Microsoft are this big organization and they're not really listening to what we're saying. But in talking to these product managers, one of the things that I think we both realized, Cam, is that they are dying for our feedback. They really want to hear it from our side and the customers too.
Yeah, I was really surprised when one of the guys I was talking to led up the team for ATP safe links and spam control. And I said, what's the best way of managing when emails go into junk folder and they're not supposed to go in there? And he just basically said, show us what sort of emails are going to the junk folder. And I thought, you know, is this sort of like a technical support forum? Or and this was just one-on-one and walking up to the Microsoft stand at the show. And he basically looked at my phone and he said, oh yeah, well, that particular email, I'd be very keen to see why that went to junk, because that's a legitimate one. So can you forward that on to me? And when I get back to the office on Monday, I'll have a look at that and get back to you. And I was just blown away. I thought, wow, these guys actually really care about not only for MSPs, but users in general about how they're using their system.
Yeah, the attitude that comes out of these guys is really, really good. And they're very passionate about building great products that we use and that we use effectively. They're not just doing it because that's their job. They actually, that enthusiasm really does come through when you meet these guys. And, you know, that was probably one of the biggest positives that came out of that conference, or out of the conference for me, was just getting that exposure to those people that, yeah, without that trip wouldn't have been possible.
It was one of the funny things that came out of the conference, which is some of my expectations before going to the conference. I think me and Taz sat down a few days before leaving to look at the schedule of what the shows were on and what sections and what events were on. And we were just blown away by how much good content we could see from the program was. So it was more of a challenge of what things do we really want to go and see, rather, because you'd find that there'd be three or four things on that you're just dying to see, but you'd really have to make a hard choice between one or the other.
Yeah, and that's a great segue into, you know, both of you guys were up at the Microsoft Partner Conference with me, and now you've both gone to Inspire. How would you compare the two events?
They were both similar in some ways and very, very different in other ways. So just to clarify, you're talking about Tech Summit in Sydney late last year, which...
Yeah, well, the Partner Summit and then the Tech Summit on the back end of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We were all there. And look, that for me, that was my first foray into a Microsoft conference. So I guess personally, that was a little bit, it was new to me then. So it was quite exciting. And by the same token, so was Inspire. But I think where they differed was just, I guess, in the magnitude of the conference. So Tech Summit was obviously on a small scale to Inspire. Which meant there was more content and Inspire, there were more people there. But in terms of differences, I guess, I wouldn't say there were too many differences, other than the fact that you've got the American product managers and the people who are working actually on the products would seem to be more present over at Inspire than they were in Australia. But other than that, it was kind of similar.
Yeah, I kind of found that I think the session sizes were probably 2 to 3 times larger, would you say?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and also I found that the number of sessions on felt like it was 2 or 3 times more the volume compared to Australia, I guess. And I think that's just also reflective of how many people attend the show and what sort of budgets that Microsoft had to put on the show for us.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that you just can't get in Australia. We don't have the scale here. We have 24 million people. You have, you know, Microsoft heartland over in America. It's a lot easier for the product managers to come along. One of the big things that Taz was saying before was you could go and there'd be a OneDrive stand and an ATP stand, and there'd be a stand with each one of these products, whereas that was not something that was there. You'd go up and maybe speak to some generalist experts and maybe get lucky with an MVP who knew a lot about it, but you didn't have that level of granularity in each one of those Microsoft products, which it sounded like that was really valuable.
Yeah, so I think Microsoft had set up their own section, and I think it was called Modern Workplace, I think they called it, Ken. So, yeah. And yeah, essentially for every product within the cloud platform, there was a stand there and someone you could speak to who knew the product intimately. Which, yeah, as Cam mentioned before, he spent half a day with the Office 365 ATP. So it wasn't ATP, it was Office 365 ATP that had a specific stand just for that. So it just shows you how granular that was, which was great. Really good way to get information on the particular products, as well as give feedback to the people who actually matter within those product teams.
And I think there was a very big presence in the show that Microsoft are really starting to understand the challenges that MSPs and businesses face in general in adopting to a modern workplace. That was very obvious because they had things like use case scenarios, but not just saying, hey, if the business does this, then do that. It was spread amongst, I think, 12 or 14 different industries. So if you're in the medical industry, this is the best way to adopt Teams. If you're in a legal industry, this is the best way to approach the modern workplace and a modern desktop.
Yeah, so and to come back to the earlier question, Brenton, that you asked, in relation to how this was different to the conference in Sydney, I would say around the time of the Sydney conference, the announcement of Microsoft 365 had just recently come out at Inspire last year. So there was that took up a lot of the focus at that particular event. But this year, we're a year into Microsoft 365. It's obviously still very topical. However, the focus had shifted, I think, more from the technical side of things to more about what Cam was just saying, which is talking about adoption and strategies and how do we actually get people using the technology. And in fact, one of the organizations that they were showcasing was a company that I'm not sure if I can say the name, but their whole business was effectively built around going into organizations and helping them adopt the technology. They didn't have a single technical person on their team. So that perspective was very different.
Yeah. I think, again, they were very obvious but very helpful as well in providing these adoption guides for the different industries, and we'll see if we can maybe put some up on the show notes with the links to the documents, because we found that they were written in a way that you could just hand to a customer and the customer would look at that and go, oh yeah, well this is us, and it just helps the sell and the pitch to a new customer that may come from an environment where they haven't seen Teams before and they're not used to IT delivering real productivity to a business. So again, I think that's a great thing that Microsoft have now done.
Yeah, I think it really highlights the changes that IT is in a company now. It used to be a department that used to provide services to the company. Now the technology has really become the backbone of the entire business. And it's not just IT anymore. It's not just technical stuff. It's the stuff that you guys are talking about now that is really at the first and foremost. Okay, well, lawyers need to get stuff done quickly. How do they work better using technology rather than here's a box, here's a device, we put security on it, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do that, no, you can't do that, which was the old paradigm of IT. It's really, what can we do now? Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's the amount of value that you can really deliver to a business now with Microsoft 365 is absolutely phenomenal. If you're just going out there to try and sell licensing, you're missing out on a huge opportunity for growth and also for revenue. One of the takeaways that I got from the show, which was to encourage my clients that have got subcontractors, that really that the frontline licenses would be adequate for their subcontractors out in the field. So that gives them access to the shared files and the calendar and job tracking and resources that an organization or a business might have. So before that opportunity didn't exist for me, but now I'll be able to sell frontline licenses out, and that will, you know, for me, that the growth is, I'm just really looking forward to getting out there and start showing the customers these new SKUs.
Yeah, I think Nadella was right on topic there, where he's talking about getting out to the edge, that we're very good at securing the office, we're very good at securing the enterprise, but then there's a whole bunch of frontline workers that aren't getting service properly, and that's where your shadow IT comes. You can't send a document to them because they're not on the Office 365, so you spin up Dropbox to send it out, and all of a sudden your whole security strategy is falling over, everything's falling over because you're trying to accommodate frontline workers. But I think Microsoft has some really cool solutions around Windows 10S, and also, you know, using Outlook Web App instead of Outlook, and providing that to frontline staff, and they can have it on their mobile. And, you know, how would you, did you see any of those sort of use cases in Inspire?
I didn't see specifically those. I sort of got to the point in the show where I needed to spend more time talking to some of the Microsoft people. So I decided to flag some of the sessions I wanted to go to, because I'll view them online a bit later. But I was talking about use cases to a lot of the Microsoft guys, and they came back with a lot of great ideas and the ways that I could start to roll out some of this technology that I'd never thought of before.
Excellent. And have you thought about doing anything with the front line, or was there an opportunity that you identified that you hadn't probably seen before or hadn't heard of before that you've gone, that's what Axiom has to do, that's what we have to do?
Definitely, yeah. The frontline worker piece is something that I have to admit I've ignored.
I think we're all guilty of that, aren't we?
I'd say so, but it did bring that front of mind, and that, I guess, that's the whole point of the conference. And, you know, it's kind of the name Inspire is actually pretty spot on, I think, because I actually walked away from that feeling inspired about new things I could actually do with the technology that's there. Because when, you know, you're sitting in the office day to day and you're just working away, you sort of lose sight of the bigger picture here of what it is this technology is there to do. And going and seeing what other people are doing, and getting those use cases where, you know, they don't always fit necessarily to what you're doing, but they give you that creative thinking around how can we actually go and apply this to my customers. That for me is probably the biggest benefit of the whole thing.
One of the, I guess, going to such a big show, you get invited to a lot of the vendor parties and a lot of other sorts of functions that are outside of the conference, and you get to really network and have great conversations with the sort of guys that will deliver the support for you when you get back to Australia. One of the ones I found was the Microsoft Australia partners. We met some of the guys there that head up the Australian representation for Microsoft, and we got to ask him a few sort of pertinent questions, such as, you know, how can sort of Microsoft help me build my business and my Microsoft practice? But they were very welcoming. They gave us all jackets with Australia on the back. So as we walked around the conference, we could see the guys from France, we can see the guys from other countries around the world. And it really made you feel like you're part of a well-supported community that actually care about where you're trying to go with your business and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and I'd add to that, the opportunity there to speak to these, you know, key account managers within Microsoft whose job is to help partners succeed is another massive thing that you wouldn't get if you weren't there. What I think that allows partners to do is to, in chatting to these people, get an understanding of what they're trying to achieve and what their goals are, so that as a partner you can align. And once you align with them, they will start to help you more and more, because all of a sudden you're heading in the same direction. But without, I guess, having that engagement with them that you get by being present at the conference, it can be a little bit more difficult to get to that point. So it's definitely a big plus.
Mm. Yeah, well, I met one of the top Australian Microsoft partners, and I asked him, you know, what's your tip for, you know, dealing with Microsoft? And he said, don't be one of those guys that sits there and bags and whinges about Microsoft, and Microsoft doesn't do this, Microsoft should do this better, and Microsoft should do that better. Be the sort of person who goes, you know, what is Microsoft trying to achieve? where do their tools fit into what we're doing, and then go heavy into that rather than sit there and go, you know, oh, if only Microsoft aligned their entire business around what I wanted to do, which is completely unreasonable.
I think Brendan's sort of trying to say is that you have to start the conversation with Microsoft about how you can sort of help them, but then they'll turn around and say, well, we can help you as well, and this is how we can both work together rather than what can you do for me?
Yeah, exactly right.
Mm.
All right, so we're going to wind it up. Number one big takeaway, will we start with Cam?
Look, the relationships with Microsoft and getting that insight from where they're going with some of their products, you just can't get anywhere. You can't get from a podcast. You can't get from a YouTube. You actually have to talk to them and go there. And of course, the sessions were just jam-packed full of value. It was fantastic.
I just add to that. It's really the networking and the people that you meet at these things. The sessions are great, but as Cam said, you can't get to all of them. So really, coming back now, I'm just focused on going back and watching those sessions. But the thing you can't do is go back and meet those people again and build those connections. So,
but with Twitter.
Well, you can't do that.
LinkedIn.
It's just not the same, so...
So what we might do is we might include a couple of your favourite Inspire sessions that you went to, the video links in the show notes, and a little bit about those adoption guides for you guys at home listening or in the car.
Mm.
Thanks so much for both of you for coming in. It was really interesting to hear. I hadn't been to one, so I didn't know much about it. And I was actually surprised at how well it was run and how much value you guys got out of it.
Yeah, you'll have to keep a closer eye on your inbox, Brenton, because these sorts of sponsorship campaigns that distributors and other people have to go to these conferences, definitely well worth it.
Excellent. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thanks, Brenton.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.